This is the Sean Hannity Show podcast.
Stay right here for our final news roundup and information overload
in the final hour of the Sean Hannity Show.
And yet you're suggesting this constitutional amendment that would subject Supreme Court justices to retention elections, which sounds like injecting politics into the one branch of government the framers were very clear about. They did not want to have to be subject to the political winds. How do you explain that?
Well, let's be clear. The court has injected itself into politics. You've got, you know, Justice Scalia wrote two powerful dissents. I would encourage everyone to read Justice Scalia's dissents, where he says these decisions are a fundamental threat to democracy. And he says five unelected lawyers have declared themselves the rulers
of 320
million Americans. What's interesting, you know, I wrote a long op-ed in National Review laying out that 20 states have adopted retention elections. Now, they're rarely used, but they're a check when judges abuse their authority and violate the Constitution. And if you're, you know, one of the things Justice Scalia talks about, you've got nine lawyers. They're all from Harvard or Yale. There are no Protestants on the court. There are no evangelicals on the court. The elites on the court look over much of this country as flyover country. They think that our views are simply parochial and don't deserve to be respected. And Justice Scalia pointed out, I mean, what a crazy system to have the most important issues of our day decided by unelected lawyers. We have 50 states. If states could decide this, some states, maybe New York and California would go one way, and maybe Texas and Florida would go the other. That's the miracle of our Constitution.
All right, that was Ted Cruz. I agree with everything he just said here. Here we have two court decisions and more fallout from all this. Glad you're with us. Sean Hannity Show. Let me give you our number. We'll get to your calls. 800-941-SEAN on Twitter. The Let Not Your Heart Be Troubled Twitter Army Brigade 24-7, 365 is at Sean Hannity. But on the Obamacare decision, you have Scalia saying we should call Obamacare SCOTUS care, because words don't have any meaning anymore. Now, this is the second time the Supreme Court has bailed out Obamacare by reading in an interpretation in the law that was not meant to be there. The first case back in 2012 was a mandate is not a tax. Well, it turns out that according to Justice Roberts, well, it is a tax, even though Obama wasn't even arguing that it was a tax because he was saying it was not a tax. So to give them wiggle room and keep the law alive, well, then even those arguing in favor, that you have John Roberts and the liberal justices had to actually say something that the side that they agreed with wasn't even saying. Words don't mean anything. If you talk about exchanges established by the state, no, that means the state or Kathleen Sebelius and the federal government, even though it specifically was designed to be established by the state. And then on the other issue, the issue of gay marriage, you have Justice Scalia's dissent, which he writes, I write separately to call attention to this court's threat to American democracy. What is he referring to? Unelected Supreme Court justices with lifetime tenure rewriting legislation from the bench. Extraordinarily dangerous and unconstitutional. Anyway, here to deal with all this, Mark Levin, not to be messed up with the great one, Mark Levin. He's a constitutional attorney, supposedly, former legislative counsel to Congressman Barney Frank. And also with us is Ovik Roy of the Manhattan Institute. Welcome, both of you.
Hey, Sean. Hey, great to be with you.
Well, Ovik, let me start with you, because if seven separate times the Obamacare law states the exchanges established by the state, how does the Supreme Court come in and say that words don't mean what they say? Is that their role and purpose? Are they allowed to legislate from the bench? Are they allowed to just rewrite laws? Are they allowed, even though the Obama administration, through a solicitor general, argues that the mandate is not a tax, but yet John Roberts and liberal justices say no, that it is a tax, when they're not even arguing that point, to make this law stand because they screwed it up so bad?
You know, the crazy thing, Sean, about this past week was, on one day, you had John Roberts saying, oh, yeah, we have the power to legislate from the bench. We're going to do it. The next day, he's saying how terrible it was in the gay marriage case that the majority was legislating from the bench. So I don't really know what to believe about John Roberts anymore. I mean, you know, Ted Cruz, you had the Ted Cruz clip from him saying, well, you know, we just got to have a check on people. And I get that. But at the same time, Ted Cruz is one of the guys who was saying that John Roberts was a solid conservative. And so if we as Republicans appoint John Roberts to the bench, then, you know, the chickens are going to come home to roost eventually, right?
Mark Levine, look, I would think as a liberal that you are, you wouldn't like, as a constitutional scholar, supposedly, and a constitutional attorney, I think you would believe in separation of powers, co-equal branches of government, don't you?
Of course.
So if we have nine justices deciding to rewrite the law or not look at the exact text of the law as it was plainly meant, that should be problematic for you.
It is. When they called corporations people, that was problematic. Corporations aren't in the Constitution. When they declared Bush to be president, even though Gore won the Electoral College, that was problematic. That was legislating from the bench.
No, Gore didn't win the Electoral College.
Well,
Gore did not win the Electoral College. He did not win.
He won Florida.
Every study that came out post-election, even by, you know, great liberal institutions like the New York Times and others, all said that George Bush won the election.
I invite your readers to actually read the studies. Even Matt Drudge admitted Gore won the election if you vote. Now, you're right if you only count some of the votes.
Well, hang on a second. It was Al Gore. Let's be factually clear here. Al Gore didn't want to count all the votes.
Excuse me.
It was his attorneys that requested only a recount in certain jurisdictions. So, you know, if you're going to be factually accurate here, it was the Democrats that didn't want to count all the votes. The second thing is there is a procedure for voting. And if you have pimpled and dimpled and hanging and swinging chads because the system was so antiquated, I think you can argue that, yeah, you're going to have to make some type of subjective decision about whether or not a vote counts or what the intent of the voter was. And in that case, it was extraordinarily difficult from anybody's perspective.
I can't believe you really want to go here, Sean, but I invite your readers to look at the study, which shows that under any system of counting, as long as you count all the votes.
By the way, these would be listeners. Okay, by every objective accounting, it's not true. You're wrong on every account.
You're dead wrong. You're dead wrong, Sean.
No, I'm right as usual.
You're wrong if you count all the votes, Gore wins.
So seven times in the Supreme Court ruling, seven times in the Obamacare law, it says exchanges established by the state. What is, if it doesn't mean established by the state, what does it mean?
Well, it means that the states can establish an exchange, or the federal government can establish an exchange as a backup if the states don't. There's 100 provisions that say that in the law, and that was the intent of the law. And only Democrats drafted the law. So for Republicans to say now what the Democrats really meant when they drafted the law is a little bit crazy.
No, because the language, you're actually wrong, because what the way they designed this was they wanted the states, they wanted to pressure the states, and they wanted consequences for the states.
Sean,
that is correct.
If that's what they wanted, how come there's zero legislative history of that?
Because it actually was written.
You're making it up now.
Mark, it was written into the law.
Do they say or do they not? The law is very clear. The wording of the law is very clear. And at the end of the day, the Supreme Court precedents are very strong. And everyone agrees about this, by the way.
It's a textual issue.
That what the law actually says
write a new one.
And the law... No. The law actually says that tax credits can only flow through exchanges established by the state.
I love it.
Section 1311.
Only conservatives can tell us what liberal Democrats meant when they passed the law. If you don't like the law, feel it. Write a new one.
All right, Mark, you got to let other people talk. Let Ovik make his point, then we'll go back to your liberal point of view that's wrong. Go ahead, hang on.
I will agree with that last point, which is I don't agree with the Supreme Court ruling. I agree with Scalia's dissent. And by the way, we have to do a much, much better job as Republicans of appointing people with clear judicial track records of strict constructionism and original intent. We have not done that. John Roberts was a classic case of not doing that. Having said all that, it wasn't up to the Supreme Court to overturn Obamacare. One thing that I think a lot of people don't realize about this case on both sides is even if the Supreme Court had stopped with the challengers, it would not have changed one semicolon of the Affordable Care Act that Congress passed. Because this case was not about whether Obamacare was constitutional or unconstitutional. It was whether or not the Obama administration was implementing Obamacare as Congress specified that it should. And so the point is, even if the Supreme Court had sided with the challengers, you'd still have to repeal Obamacare and replace it and do all that stuff. And so no one should have expected that the Supreme Court was going to do the dirty work of replacing the law or changing the law or doing the things that the democratic process is justly supposed to do.
On that, I agree completely.
All right, let's move on to this separate ruling, which is about gay marriage. And, Ovik, what's your take on that?
Yeah, as I was saying earlier, I mean, I think the thing there is, you know, it's a real shame that that we couldn't have decided this democratically. I think, you know, mores are changing, and for people who strongly support gay marriage, there was a pathway to change it, which is to say convince your state government to pass a law saying that gay marriage should have should be just like a heterosexual traditional marriage. But having the Supreme Court unilaterally impose that on the states is a violation of the 10th Amendment. And I think what happened here was, again, you had, this time it was Kennedy legislating from the bench instead of Roberts. And this is the problem. Roberts set the precedent himself. He said, in the Obamacare case, I'm going to legislate from the bench. And then in the gay marriage case, he complained about legislating from the bench. Well, you can't have it both ways. Either judges are judges or judges are legislators. Take your pick.
Mark?
Well, it certainly wasn't legislating from the bench. The 14th Amendment, which trumps the 10th Amendment, says that every person has equal protection under the laws. And unless you feel like the Supreme Court couldn't have overturned, for example, segregated schools, any time you have a minority that's mistreated by a majority, that's precisely when you need court.
All right, let's take this a step further. Now, the Texas Attorney General has weighed in. He believes that clerks can refuse same-sex marriage. And I think an even more important point is, you know, what about the First Amendment and the freedom of religion and the free practice thereof of churches? Because you had a law professor from Illinois over the weekend, Robin Fretwell Wilson, outlining several scenarios where he says churches and synagogues and mosques could be forced to participate and perform gay marriage.
Not true. Not true.
Oh, not true? So you would say the right of churches to practice their religion freely, even if you would, quote, view it as discriminatory, that's acceptable to you?
Absolutely. Listen, they have churches that don't allow non-Catholics to marry. There are synagogues that don't allow non-Jews to marry. Churches, synagogues, and mosques have been defining religious marriage for all of our history. But civil marriage has to be done equally under the law. That's what the 14th Amendment says.
Ovik, what do you think? Because I actually believe that this is going to come to a head at some point down the road. In his dissent, Clarence Thomas warned about this coming on as an important issue in the future. I think it probably will be sooner rather than later.
Yeah, no, I think Clarence Thomas and you are correct, which is to say that if not conducting gay marriages is a violation of the 14th Amendment, churches aren't allowed to discriminate on race, on gender. They can in terms of the priesthood, but they can't in terms of services. Well, they can, their tax exempt status can be denied.
Mark, here's a problem though.
We don't have
Mark. I'm not finished. I'm talking. Here's the problem: is you got the Little Sisters of the Poor issue that came up during the health care debate, and here you have Catholic churches, Catholic charities, Catholic hospitals, and they were being forced by our government to dispense birth control and morning after pills through their health care plans, and their so-called fix was this. Well, we'll let the insurance companies give it for free, and therefore your conscience is clear, which they still didn't want to do because they still felt it was against their deeply held religious conviction. Now, if you are consistent, I would assume you stand with the Little Sisters of the Poor and you stand with Catholic charities and Catholic hospitals and you support their right as a religious institution to decide whether or not they want to provide that as part of their health care coverage.
There's a huge difference between the government regulating insurance companies, which they have absolute right to do, and forcing a church or a synagogue.
You see where Mark now crosses the line, and he says there are limits on people's religious beliefs, and the government can force the Little Sisters of the Poor to do something, provide a benefit that goes against their deeply held religious view. So you don't support the First Amendment. You don't support the free
benefit.
Exercise thereof, and you support big government forcing people to do things that goes against their deeply held religious values.
Here's the difference, Sean. Religion can be a shield, but not a sword. You can use a religious belief to practice what you want in your own home. You can marry whomever you want in your own church.
But you can't have a Catholic charity, Catholic hospital, you can't be a nun and practice your belief. Listen, this may shock you, but religion doesn't stop when you get out of church on Sunday morning. People live this 24/7, 365, and no government should have the right to force people of deep religious conviction to do the things that this government is forcing them to do. And people for you to go against that, you cannot be a constitutional attorney.
Force their religion on others who don't share it.
But then don't work for Catholic charities, Catholic hospitals, or the Little Sisters of the Poor. You don't have to work for them.
If they're getting money from the federal government, the federal government can however they want.
So the federal government then can dictate what? That everybody gets an abortion? They can do whatever they want? No, that's wrong.
So that would be a violation of the Fourth Amendment. Yeah, okay. Your right to be secure.
So Mark Levine does not support religious liberty. It just took us a whole 20 minutes to get to the truth about it. All right, 800, thank you both. 800-941-SHAWN, if you want to be a part of the program. Quick break, right back. We'll continue.
Hannity Headlines. A bite-sized version of the show that you can take with you everywhere you go. To sign up today for Hannity Headlines, go to Hannity.com. Standing up for what's right with America. We're back on the Sean Hannity Show.
All right, 25 till the top of the hour. Toll-free, our telephone number is 800-941-SHAWN. You want to be a part of the program. By the way, this was an AP story today. The United States headline now has more Spanish speakers than Spain. Only Mexico has more. Goes on to say, a woman holds up a sign in Spanish, "You, me, we are America," during a rally about immigration in San Diego. The United States is now the world's second largest Spanish-speaking country after Mexico. The report says 41 million native Spanish speakers in the U.S., plus 11.6 million who are bilingual, mainly the children of Spanish-speaking immigrants. By the way, I don't care that we have, the language doesn't mean anything as long as we all understand one thing. English, and this is just a fact. If you love people that do not speak English, you've got to encourage them to learn English. Why? Because English is the language of success in America. If you can't speak English, doors and opportunities will be shut, and I don't want to see that happen to people. Now, with that said, how did this happen? Well, we've had a demographic shift. And that is, America's left its borders wide open, and people from poorer countries like Mexico and Central America and Nicaragua and El Salvador and other countries in Central America, they've all come here illegally, not respecting our laws and our sovereignty. So it's, you know, do I care? No, I studied Spanish in school. I have many friends who speak Spanish fluently. That's not the issue. America needs to control its borders. And that's something that neither Republicans nor Democrats want to have happen, because if they did, they would have built the fence already. But they don't want to do it, because Republicans, they want to cave in to the special interests in big business that want cheap labor. And Democrats want a demographic shift in the country. And they're believing that most people that come from these countries would prefer bigger government. That's their bet. By the way, what a weekend with this second killer that was caught. The convicted murderer, David Sweat. Anyway, he was shot and captured yesterday by a state trooper who spotted him strolling along a road about 2 miles from the Canadian border. And that's how far they got. That's pretty far. About 60 miles from where his partner in crime got shot and killed. But anyway, he was shot twice in the torso to keep him from fleeing into the woods. As the policeman saw him in an open area, he was listed in stable condition. Anyway, his fellow fugitive, Richard Matt, left a "have a nice day" note for the jailers when they escaped on June 6th. He's expected to survive. I said at the beginning, I said this is not going to end well. And I knew it was going to end probably with both of them dying. In this case, this guy was shot. He survived. But if they both had life terms in prison, there was no way they were going to go easily. Anyway, a lot of credit to the police department. I mean, they put full manpower on this, and they got the job done after a few weeks. I thought the longer this went on, the more difficult in the end it was going to be for them to get them. All right, let's get to our busy telephones here. Michelle is in Vegas. K-Dawn, how are you, Michelle? Glad you called. And one interesting thing, we're planning a trip in Vegas. I think it's in October, right, Linda? Yeah, we got Vegas on the calendar this year. What's going on?
Hey, Sean, I'm good. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to talk about the gay marriage. I am gay, and although I'm happy I can get married, I don't like the way it was done because I think it's a slippery slope, and I'm not a constitutional lawyer, but I probably know as much as our president that claims to be. But I think it's a slippery slope. I don't think that that's what the Supreme Court justices are there to do. But that being said, I think there's bigger issues than whether I can marry my girlfriend or not in the world. People are being beheaded by ISIS, and all we're focusing on is whether two gay people can get married. I mean, when a guy in France gets
married. Let me ask you a question, because this is, you know, you're being upfront, you're telling us, do you think most people, seriously? And I was watching, there was the Gay Pride weekend, and you know, the White House was in rainbow colors, and New York City has a Gay Pride parade every year, and people were out, you know, having their parade party fun and all that stuff. Do you really think most people care what you're doing?
No, and this is the reason, this is the thing, though, is I'm originally from Utah, and Utah passed it in the way that a lot of, it's one judge that says, yeah, now it's okay. But the thing is the backlash that's coming is because I think normal, average Americans that didn't care before now are feeling pushed and cornered, and now they're coming out and saying things in public. It's more divisive. It's just like the racial tension, I think, is more now than it was 10 years ago, and I think it's the same with the gay issue. I'm not a big fan of gay pride. I'm probably a very big on the minority part of gays where I'm very conservative. I just want to live my life. I don't care if you're straight. I hope you don't care if I'm gay.
Well, let me ask this from another perspective here, because it's an interesting because you're coming at this. I got to be honest. Michelle, it's really none of my business. And you know what? Maybe when I first became a Christian, maybe I was more fervent, if you will, in my position on this. And, you know, I came to realize a lot of things as you get older, you get a little bit wiser. You know, if you look at, for example, Christian doctrine, it says premarital sex is morally wrong, right?
Right.
It says, you know, extramarital sex is wrong. It says, you know, there's all sorts of, you know, quote, sins, right? Okay, so from a perspective that I learned, that is there the church's view on homosexuality, right?
Right.
But it's still the same Bible that says all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God, right?
Right.
Okay, now, if I went through my past on this radio program, I can tell you I don't pass the smell test in God's eyes. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
In other words,
and nobody. I mean, that's the thing is everybody's sinned.
All right. So,
and that's the thing is. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
And then it also says somewhere in the Bible, "Judge not, lest you be judged." Right.
Right.
All right. So, what's the difference between my sins, and if it wants to look at the things that I? And by the way, I was a horrible, incorrigible kid. I mean, incorrigible. So, if I look at my life and all the mistakes I made, and I had to admit it to, say, a pastor, and then, you know, you tell your pastor you're gay. What's the difference between my sins and your sins if he views that as a sin, if he does?
Nothing. And that's but the only difference I can see is one group isn't saying having adultery pride parades. But I'm just saying it's not being pushed, and that's what the thing is. I don't go out there wave my rainbow flag. I don't have a rainbow flag to wave, but I don't wave it. I'm not out front. I'm not, because that's my intimate. That's for me and my girlfriend. That has not, you know what I mean?
Let me ask. I do know what you mean, but let me ask this question. Let me ask the question a little differently. What do you think about people that have deeply held religious convictions that believe being gay is a sin? That's maybe more what I'm getting at. Maybe I didn't ask the question.
Okay. So the other part of my background is I was raised Mormon, and I do have a lot of Mormon.
So you know exactly what I'm talking about, right?
Right. And this is what I've said for years now. I have more religious friends that have accepted me for being gay than gay friends for accepting me for being religious. They think it's a sin, but they love me anyway, and I've never heard I haven't lost friends over it. My family was accepting of my girlfriend right off the bat. Like, it's like you said, a sin is a sin, and you love the sinner, hate the sin. I don't have a problem.
But you don't have a problem. I guess that's what I'm driving at. You don't have a problem that their religious views view a gay and lesbian lifestyle as sinful. In other words, you respect the fact that you disagree, but you respect right. the fact that that's their religion. That's fine. Just leave me alone.
Right. And the thing is I still consider myself Mormon. Obviously, I'm not the best Mormon, but I still have that. And I'm Christian first and foremost. And that's why I think, you know, with the whole wedding cake and everything, I would rather someone be upfront and say that's against my religion than me force them to do something, because I am so religious that I would hate for someone to go against. And I think if
and you don't wait, this is an important point. So you wouldn't want to force somebody to go against their religious views, because in other words,
that would hurt.
Yeah, I think you're showing tolerance that a lot of people, for example, I've always felt the gay community has looked for tolerance. And I think, you know, but on the other hand, I think there are some activists that want to close churches down, which is extremely intolerant because they have a different view on homosexuality. And I think that is intolerant.
I used to think that liberals were the most tolerant, and then I moved to Massachusetts. Anyway, so I found out that that's not true. But that's how a lot of the gay community is. I mean, if you ever really want to have a real conversation, we can get into the mean girl type of mentality of some lesbians, and you know how lesbians view bisexuals and everything, and it gets very intolerant. But they're screaming for tolerance, and like you said, a lot of them are tolerant of everyone that thinks the same way that they do. Well, that's not what tolerance means.
I
love my family and friends, and I've never had a problem. Like I said, I hadn't heard anything negative. Utah is about as conservative as you can get, and I never heard anything negative until they forced it, the ruling. And it still wasn't horrible, but all I'm saying is...
Well, let me tell you a little story. I hear what you're saying. Do you know Guy Benson, the conservative commentator?
I heard the name, yes.
All right. Guy recently wrote a book with Mary Catherine Hamm. And long story short, I've known Guy for many, many years. And we've never talked about, you know, his relationships with anybody. Anyway, so I'm one of the rare times I'm on a golf course. I suck at golf, but I go out every once in a while and belt the ball around and drink beer. So I'm on the golf course, and he sends me an email. And he said, by the way, want to give you a heads up. I got a new book coming out. It's being released, blah, 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 blah. And I say in the book that I'm gay. And I wrote back, Guy, I'm playing golf. This is a non-issue for me. I said, you've been my friend. You still are my friend. I said, but if you need to talk about it, we'll talk later. And then we did talk later. And then when I talked to him, he's, you know, we've just been friends, and he's younger than me. So I've kind of tried to give him good advice on his career and stuff, like I do a lot of my friends. And he was like, oh, it's such a relief, he goes to me. I said, relief? What? What do you think I was going to do? Yell at you and tell you don't do that? I mean, what am I supposed to do? I said, it's not an issue for me,
exactly,
and that's
there
it.
There are people that do get disowned. I am very fortunate, lucky that I come from such a loving family, but like I said, part of my family is extremely religious, and none of them have ever said, so it's not the religion.
And your family still loves you, right? And your
well, they tolerate me, but it has nothing to do with the fact that
you know, it's funny, because I did an interview, much against my will, with Playboy magazine once, and the guy at Playboy thought he was setting me up to, like, you know, he's really thought he got me. All right, so Hannity, what if your children turn out to be gay? Because it's one of these guys that really doesn't understand conservatives, and he thinks, you know, we're all monsters. So I said to him, I would love them. I said, if they turn out to be liberal, that's a whole different story.
Right.
I think that answer's funny. Obviously,
well,
you don't.
That,
so.
And that's the thing. They think that that's the gotcha question for any politician, for any Republican politician.
There's nothing you can do. Listen, there's nothing that anybody could do to make me stop loving my kids. George Bush had a great line in his book. He said, stop. He goes, there's nothing you can do. He's talking about his two daughters, Jenna and what's the other one's name? Barbara and Jenna. Right.
Whether I'm blessed, well, but that's the thing is I, again, at Thanksgiving, I'm like, you will accept my life. I don't do that. It's very low key. I have, you know what I mean? Like I said, I'm Christian first and foremost. That's the biggest thing. And then I'm a proud American second. And I just think there's,
but you're pretty conservative in every other, I bet on every other issue, we probably agree.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah. I'm a little more conservative than you, but yes.
Gee whiz.
I'm kidding. No, I'm kidding.
No, you know what?
Yes, and that's the thing.
Look, this is an important thing. And look, I don't want to change the definition of marriage. It's very interesting to me because, you know, and I've had many articles written about me that, oh, Hannity, he's just against gay marriage. And I'm like, okay, I'm against gay marriage, but there's not been a more outspoken voice about standing up for those gays and lesbians being slaughtered under Sharia law. And I don't understand why gay and lesbian groups don't join with me and say, stop the slaughter of women, stop the slaughter and torture of gays and lesbians.
Well, because the agenda is bigger. The agenda is the liberal agenda, and that's bigger and more important.
They could be mad as all they want about me not supporting gay marriage, but
yeah.
I'm trying to save people's lives here.
You're the real enemy.
No. All right, I got to go, but I enjoyed talking to you. I really did.
All right.
All right, Michelle, God bless. Appreciate it. 800-941-SHAWN is our toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. I can't believe, where's the time going here? Just flying by, and it's a Monday. All right.
We know you never want to miss the Sean Hannity Show. And now you never have to. Just sign up for Hannity Headlines. A bite-sized version of the show that you can take with you on your laptop, your mobile phone, everywhere you go. Even to your liberal in-law's place in Vermont.
So, yeah.
And after a few hours of that, you'll be glad you brought Sean along. To sign up today for Hannity Headlines, go to Hannity.com.
All right, that's all the time we have for today. Hannity Tonight, 10 Eastern, the latest on the ISIS threat, Supreme Court decisions, the road to 2016. In studio, Senator Ted Cruz will weigh in on all of these issues and more. Also, we have Father Jonathan Morris was at the gay rights parade in New York over the weekend. He got spat at. He'll tell us what happened there. Why is the administration extending their negotiations with Iran when Iran said no nuclear inspections? That should end it, right? Well, not with this administration. Also, the latest on the manhunt and Donald Trump and NBC part waves over his comments. 10 Eastern tonight. Hannity, Fox News. Thanks for being with us. Back here tomorrow.